When peace like a river attendeth my way, when sorrows like sea billows roll, whatever my lot, thou hast taught me to say, it is well, it is well with my soul.
It's such a gift to be here with you tonight, friends. Thank you. Traveling in these last days with Robin and having the opportunity to visit among friends in the Midwest, carrying forward the message and the energy and the life that we experienced at the World Conference in Kenya is a deep gift. And I look forward to our time together tonight, triangulating on the spirit, getting a sense from our different perspectives of what we can see, what we can hear, what we can taste of the living water flowing among us. Before we dive in to some reflections that I've been asked to bring from my own perspective, I want to see if we're sort of on the same page in terms of this theme of living water. Could you just raise your hand if this expression, this term of living water, is something that resonates with your spiritual experience? We have a lot of different language as friends. We use a lot of different images. So if we talk about living water, just sort of raise your hand if this is something that speaks to you. And maybe, thank you, and you can put your hands down. Maybe raise your hands if this is something you're sort of like, well, what are we talking about? Is this a plumbing lesson? What? Okay. So living water, I'll just try to express a little bit about this, and then maybe we will have some plumbing lessons together. And I should say that I'm just here because I'm thirsty. I'm not here because I'm an expert on living water. And I'm not here because I'm an expert on plumbing. I'm just here because, like all of us who are gathered here, I'm engaged in asking questions, in hungering and thirsting for something deeper, something more real, something more alive. And in my searching and in my seeking, I've been blessed with the opportunity to visit among friends and others in a lot of different places. And I've had the opportunity to see the ways that living water is coming up from my eyes, from what I can taste. And my hope is that I can share a little bit of that with you tonight, and that we then can share what we're seeing and what we're hearing and tasting. So if I say something that doesn't fit with your experience, I hope you'll offer that when we have some time for conversation later on. And I know that there's such richness and life present in each of our meetings, in each of our communities, and I hope we'll have an opportunity to hear that too. So hopefully my reflections will be about priming the pump, right? Maybe they'll be about just helping to draw some of this out in our time together, and then we'll see where we go. After I have concluded speaking, we've had a brief time of worship, and then we'll have some time for conversation later. So living water. There's this image that comes through often in the Bible about living water as an expression of the Holy Spirit. Living water as the divine energy. Living water as that which deepens and quickens and helps us come more alive. That which satisfies the places in us that feel broken or that feel dead or that feel as if they couldn't possibly change. It's something that washes away the debris and that is an image for the movement and the work of God. Certainly to the people of the Middle East, water was precious, just as it is everywhere, but especially precious when you live in the desert. Living water is water that's naturally flowing. It's not water that you can put in a canteen or a water bottle and carry around, because that gets stale with time. But it's water that's moving and flowing. It's water that it's safe, that you encounter, that's natural, that's rooted in creation, that you can consume, that will nourish you, that will sate your thirst. So there are images throughout the Old Testament of living water, and the Spirit is living water throughout the Psalms. And then there's this other image of living water that comes through particularly in a story about Jesus. A story that speaks to me particularly because I think it says something about how we are with one another. Now, I know for many of us among friends, we have different relationships with the Bible. And in my own journey, I've had quite a journey in relationship to the Bible. There are many parts of the Bible that still don't speak to me. There are many parts I wrestle with, but there are parts in which I found deep nourishment. And one of the ways that I found that nourishment is in understanding a practice of the first generations of friends that has been a way that friends have traditionally viewed the Bible, one of the ways that we've found meaning in those sacred stories. And that's something that I was taught, I learned from a friend named Michael Burkle at Earlham. And he wrote it this way. Early friends didn't read the Bible. They lived it. Well, what did he mean by that? He meant, or what I understand that he meant by that, is that early friends, and many friends until now, find in the Bible a language to describe their inward experience. That they find stories and metaphors that allow us to understand how we live today. And that's how I read this story about living water. So if friends will permit me, just so that we're all coming in together and we're all on the same page, I just want to share this story briefly. Yeah.
When you use the microphone, I think some people aren't hearing well.
Thank you.
Right, yeah.
Right like this.
Yeah.
Is that better?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. So like all the best stories, it begins in the middle. So Jesus had to go on his way from Judea back to Galilee. But to get to Galilee, he had to go through Samaria. How often do the most important spiritual moments in our lives encounter us not in the places we think we're going, but when we're on the journey there? So he came to a Samaritan city called Sychar, near the plot of ground that Jacob had given to his son Joseph. Jacob's well was there, and Jesus, tired out by his journey, was sitting by the well. It was about noon. A Samaritan woman, who was from a community different than Jesus, but they were related, maybe from another branch of friends. A Samaritan woman came to draw water, and Jesus said to her, "Give me a drink." His disciples had gone to the city to buy food, so it's just Jesus and this strange woman who he's never met before. The Samaritan woman said to him, "How is it that you, a Jew, ask a drink of me, a woman of Samaria? Jews do not share things in common with Samaritans." Jesus answered her, "If you knew the gift of God, and who it is that is saying to you, 'Give me a drink,' you would have asked him, and he would have given you living water." Some kind of water that's different than the ordinary water that might come out of the well. The woman said to him, "Sir, you have no bucket, and the well is deep. Where do you get that living water? Are you greater than our ancestor Jacob, who gave us the well and with his sons and his flocks drank from it?" Jesus said to her, "Everyone who drinks of this water will be thirsty again. But those who drink of the water that I will give them will never be thirsty. The water that I will give will become in them a spring of water gushing up to eternal life." Or some translations would say, a spring of water gushing up to an endless life. A sense of gushing up to that sense of connectedness with the life that is below and above and in and through everything. "The water that I will give will become in them, not just in me, but in them, a water that flows out of us, connecting us with an endless life, connecting us with that deepest and most true life." The woman said to him, "Sir, give me this water, so that I may never be thirsty or have to keep coming here to draw water." This is the image. One person with something to give, waiting by the well, encountering another. We think we're looking for something, and we're given something beyond all of our expectations. There's a thirst that opens us to the gift. There's a relationship in which the living water is found. And there's a change that happens in us where it's not about the person giving the gift anymore. It's about the life that is opened in us. And the story goes on. The woman doesn't just feel the water for herself and then go off and live with it. She goes into the town and she calls out other people, and they come out. And they don't just get the water from her. They receive the water as well, and they share it. And it comes to be shared more and more widely in the community. It becomes about that gift that's given that opens all of us. So this is the story that Friends World Committee was pointing to when they're asking us to be part of helping the living waters flow. Are we on the same page? So from that sense, we know what the living water is. In some way, we've touched it. In meeting for worship, in a sunrise, in a relationship of love, in a spiritual friendship, in a desperate moment, we've touched it. For many of us as friends, and those who travel in the circles among friends and in many of the other communities where we find ourselves, we find that in the work we do in the world. We find the living water flowing in relationships of liberation and justice. So where do we find it? Let's just shout some things out. Where do we find that in our lives? It could be in our spiritual practices. It could be in the work we're called to right now. Where do we find it here in our own lives in Minneapolis?
Worship.
In worship. We encounter that in that experience of worship.
Creativity.
In creativity, in art, in other forms of expression.
Those who challenge me to stay in integrity.
In those who challenge me to stay in integrity. Where else?
In a flower.
In nature.
In a flower smiling at me by the roadside.
In a flower smiling at me by the roadside.
Relationships with family and friends.
With family and friends in that connection. In the music of the birds.
Connection with people who come from other countries.
Connection with people from other countries who've come to be with us.
ADP in prison.
In the Alternatives to Violence Project and its work in prisons.
The smiles of children.
And the smiles of children. Can we feel it? Can we find in ourselves those moments where we've touched it? So we know what we're talking about. Thank you, Robin. So this living water, we heard it. It's always flowing. It doesn't have to be sought out. It breaks through. It finds us. It's always breaking through. The love of the Spirit, the work of life and creation is always happening. So why do we need the Religious Society of Friends? If this living water is always emerging and it's always flowing, why do we gather? Why this living tradition? It has to be more than just what we happen to encounter. It has to be more than all of the wonderful work and witness that we're engaged in the world. Because that work is happening, and it's certainly not happening just because of friends. So many people from so many different traditions and cultures are engaged in the work that's happening, the advocacy that's happening here around marriage equality, around climate change, around the other concerns that are laid on us to be involved in. Why do we need the Religious Society of Friends?
To nurture and be nurtured.
To nurture and be nurtured. the roots of a tradition, the roots that have extended for a long time to sources of water that we haven't experienced, but that have other friends have experienced. We have the living tradition that connects us, that passes that on.
Kind of as a reminder, the living water may be always there, but other things cover it up or muddy it or bump us out of the river.
As a reminder to help us remember, to help us keep coming back, to help us keep remembering. I want to invite us, friends, in our time tonight, to consider the work of the Religious Society of Friends that helps us to be more than the sum of our parts. We find so much richness and so much nourishment on our own in many different experiences in our lives. We find it in our witness in the world. But I believe that there is a special and a beautiful way that we as the Religious Society of Friends help one another to go deeper. That we help one another, that this tradition offers tools. It offers a path, it offers those living roots that help us return to that tradition. And I believe that there is yet more that we could be growing into. So what would revival look like? What would new life in the Religious Society of Friends look like? Where would we begin if that were happening? If that rediscovery of our living tradition, that growing into the future, were happening right now, what would it look like? Where would it begin? I want to share some stories tonight about some things that I've seen in my travels, some signs of life, some possibilities. I want to talk about thirst. I want to talk about relationship. And I want to talk about change. So having the opportunity in the last few years to travel in the ministry, I've had the gift of seeing, as I said, some of the ways that life is breaking through among friends. And 2 years ago, I had the opportunity to visit one of the remote outposts of Quakerism, way out at the edge of the Columbia River Gorge, where the Columbia River Gorge opens up on eastern Oregon. And there is a group of friends, a faithful group of friends, about 10 people off and on who've been meeting for a number of years. They don't get a lot of visitors. They don't have a lot of connections with the wider world. But I had the opportunity to spend some time traveling out there with a couple of other friends from Western Oregon. And we visited these folks, and as so often happens when we travel among friends, there was a wonderful potluck. And we gathered and had this fabulous fellowship. And then we sat down in the living room of one of the houses of the friends on the top of a hill looking out over the sweep of the gorge as the sun was setting. And what I felt I'd been led to do, much like tonight, is to reflect a little bit on some of the places that I saw living water, some of the places that I saw new life breaking through among friends, to share some of the news. That's one of the most vital things about the traveling ministry in our tradition, right? That we get to carry news and experiences from one place to another to help bind us together, to help sort of circulate the blood and share the oxygen among us as friends. And I began to talk about some of the ways that I saw life emerging. And I had to stop in the middle of a sentence because a young woman who was a senior in high school was sobbing. And she said, "Do you hear what he's saying? Do you hear that there's so much more out there than we realized? Do you hear that there are all these exciting new things happening out there? And you never told me? You never shared with me what you're doing in worship. You never shared that there was so much richness and depth in this tradition. Maybe you didn't know." The worship just settled, and everything changed. And friends began to share about their experiences. We felt a difference in the room. We felt that living water flowing. And the next day, when we had gone and they gathered for meeting for worship, their worship was different. And when they endorsed the minute that I carried, they described some of the experience that they had had in the worship afterwards. And they shared that experience, and they used the words living water. They said, it felt like those friends who had visited us had sprinkled living water in our little pond. And we had been opened to the essential need to share our spiritual journeys with each other, to share the richness that we've been given, the gifts that we've been given. But it began with thirst. It began with one faithful young friend who was willing to share how much she needed to hear, how hungry and thirsty she was for that sharing. Sharing our thirst is a gift. One of the ways that I know that the Spirit works among us is by giving us the hunger that helps to draw others out. One of the translations of the Beatitudes that I love most was done by the folks in the Iona community. I don't know if folks are familiar with this particular manifestation of Celtic spirituality. But in the Iona community, they've done a retranslation of the Beatitudes. And the one that I love most is, blessed are those who know their need, for theirs is the grace of heaven. Blessed are those who know their need. Blessed are we when we know what we're thirsty for. I don't know about you, but that's hard for me sometimes. I'm really challenged to talk about what I lack, to be vulnerable about the places that I am still not whole, or the places that I don't have the experience in meeting for worship that I want, the places that I have doubts and struggles about whether I belong to this community at all, the places where I'm broken or insecure or in need of support. But I think when we talk about living water, like the woman at the well, it's a vital first step to acknowledge that we're thirsty. You don't give water to someone who doesn't want to drink. And so many of us, we might not talk about it, but we are thirsty. I had the opportunity last month to spend some time traveling in the ministry among friends in Cuba, yearly meeting. In 1991, a friend named Heredio Santos, who is now the last living member of the older generation of pastors who faithfully shepherded Cuba Yearly Meeting through some very, very difficult times, who lived through the time of religious repression when it was very, very difficult to be a friend in Cuba, and who, along with some other faithful friends, were part of resuscitating and reviving Cuba Yearly Meeting to the place where it's now thriving and growing, where half of the population of the Yearly Meeting, more than half, are now young adult friends, discovering Quakerism in a new way in their time. And I had the opportunity to be with a group of five other young adult friends from my Yearly Meeting, from New England Yearly Meeting, traveling in the ministry among friends in Cuba, learning how the living water is flowing among them. And I visited Heredio Santos's meeting. He now just lives in a little hut over near the side of the meeting house in a little parsonage where there's a new pastor who's one of these young adult friends whose name is Candido. Heredio spends his time teaching, mentoring, and feeding his chickens. But Candido has the work of reviving, of sustaining the life, the spiritual life of this meeting. And he has some amazing visions, some amazing plans for participating in the revival of what Quakerism is in Cuba, of how it can be both authentically Cuban and authentically Quaker in a way that's rediscovering itself, surrounded on all sides by other interpretations of faith, and in a country facing the possibility of dramatic change with a lot of fear and a lot of hope. And I said, Candido, I've been carrying this sense since the World Conference and before, this sense that we need to go more and more deeply into the source of living water, that we could be opened to be much more vital channels as the Religious Society of Friends than we have been. And I said, what, you've been feeling this too. What do we do? Where do we begin? And there was a pause, and he said, to encounter the fountain, only our thirst will guide us. So what are you thirsty for? We need your thirst. As I've traveled, I've seen a hunger in young adult friends to understand more deeply the ways that the life and power is reached in our tradition, to understand more deeply the practices and the disciplines of friends. I've seen a hunger among friends of all ages through gatherings like Quaker Spring to encounter the rigor and the depth that has been faithfully carried by friends in the conservative tradition for all of these years, to understand practices like friends' traditions of ministry and eldering that were abandoned by many of us, sometimes for some good reasons, over some concerns about ways that we got lost, but to rediscover what those traditions are about and to help reinterpret them and rediscover them today. And I know friends in this meeting have been involved, friends in Minneapolis have been involved in that rediscovery through organizations like the Friends General Conference Traveling Ministries Program, through ministries like the School of the Spirit that are inviting people into a deepening experience of those traditions. I know that many friends share a sense that despite the beautiful work that is being done through programs like AVP, through some of the programs of the American Friends Service Committee, through the work and the witness of FCNL in Washington, that there is a gap between what we have done as friends in the past, the way we have been engaged, the way that our witness has spoken in the world, and where it is in many of our communities now. That there's a sense that our Quaker service could still be more, and maybe that we're being invited into something more than we're living now. I've seen that hunger in a friend named Christina Repoli, who years ago was given a vision of a ministry that would provide an opportunity for any young adult friend in the Religious Society of Friends, and any young person who wanted to have this experience, to spend a year of their lives engaged in Quaker service, living in an intentional spiritual community, worshiping with other friends, being given a grounding in friends' spiritual practices and tradition, being able to encounter the richness of the gifts across our tradition, and serving in a year-long service placement with a ministry or a social justice organization or a nonprofit in a community in the United States or elsewhere. And a few weeks ago, the first class of Quaker Voluntary Service volunteers moved into a house in Atlanta in partnership with Atlanta Friends Meeting, thanks to the support of friends across the country. And I'm on my way, after we finish this gathering, to Portland, Oregon, to be with friends there from across the branches of our tradition, to worship with them and to discern whether we might be able to open a house there with God's help. And we're in consultations in Philadelphia and in other places about how this dynamic ministry could be brought to other places as a way of deepening and enriching the life of our religious society. Could this be one of the things that helps to satisfy our thirst, one of the concrete ways that our thirst is quenched? But being honest about our thirst means being vulnerable, and it means being authentic. And it means being willing to trust that one of the ways the Spirit gives gifts in our community is through making us thirsty for more, for bringing us to a place of saying, what we are experiencing now is not quite enough. It's beautiful, it's wonderful, I love our community, but more is still being asked. So what are you thirsty for? Your thirst, friend, is a gift. One of the things that I've been thirsty for is, as I've felt myself falling into traveling in the ministry and this sense of where we are as friends and the rich blessing of being able to see how the Spirit is moving, I found myself without roots. And I found myself driven into the tradition of travel in the ministry and the journals of early friends. And that's one of the places that I've discovered life that I never would have thought was there. When I was a little kid, I'd look at those things and the words would just be totally foreign. But now I read them and I recognize that way that, like Michael Burkle said, that they weren't They weren't reading, they were living. I can find in their language a way of describing the experience because they were engaged in the same work that we're engaged in now. So when I read a letter from George Fox in the first generation of Friends, writing from prison, writing from the Launceston Jail in Cornwall, and he's writing to Friends, this is a letter that many of us may be familiar with, at least some of the language. This is the one that ends, "Be patterns, be examples in all countries, places, islands, nations, wherever you come." But we don't often read, many of us, I didn't, the first part of the letter. The part where he's instructing, he's giving advice and encouragement to friends who are traveling in the ministry. And this is just a part of what he says. I think it speaks to something about relationship. So the ministers of the Spirit, which is all of us, right? Because we're all part of that universal ministry together. So the ministers of the Spirit must minister to that spirit that is transgressed and in prison, which hath been in captivity in every one, whereby with the same spirit people must be led out of captivity up to God and do service to God and have unity with God, with the scriptures, and with one another. So what's that about? The work of ministry, according to George Fox, early on in the movement, advice to friends who are engaging in the ministry, is about ministering to that same spirit that is in captivity in some sense, that is not fully free in each one of us, answering that of God in each one. And that as we're able to do that, the more we're able to help each other out of captivity, of whatever in us is still not whole, whatever in us is still not free, that spirit in each of us comes more and more into fullness. And that spirit becomes more into fullness among us, and we all become more alive. We all become more free. The more we're able to help one another out, the more we come alive. Maybe another way to say that is, in our communities, we're responsible for each other's liberation. What if we came to meeting with that expectation? That each of us were bringing this sense that there was some part of us that was still not fully alive, that was still not as whole or as fully realized as it could be, that we were not yet who we were created to be, not entirely, and that the work of our relationship as we are together in our personal relationships, in our spiritual friendships, in the work of ministry and counsel, in our committee work, in our work when we offer vocal ministry, is in some way about helping one another to be more free, about standing in that place in the story and being Jesus to one another, moving in that motion in the way that the story invites us to consider. Because the living water that's given is not the living water that has to keep being given. It's the living water that frees that person so that the living water lives more fully in them. It's not about holding on to the gift. It's about letting it be free. That, to me, has been a vital way of understanding, and it's changed, for me, my way of engaging with friends. Something different happens when we walk into those encounters, rather than saying, what can I get from this person? Saying, how can I serve? How can I be part of the work that we're engaged in together? That, to me, is the deeper work of eldering that we're rediscovering. And for those who aren't familiar with that word, it basically means something like spiritual midwifery, that we walk with each other. Again, that we're helping liberate each other. We're helping one another come through, be born into who we're created to be. What if that is the basic premise of how we gather and who we are as friends? I've experienced that in my monthly meeting. I don't know if some friends here may have encountered other friends from Putney Meeting. There are some friends who've been visible. I know one of the friends who has recently been very active in traveling among friends is a friend named Steve Chase from my meeting. He wrote a book called Letters to a Fellow Seeker that was released in cooperation with the Quaker Quest program at the Friends General Conference gathering. But I'm going to tell a couple stories about some other folks in my meeting, or at least some of our experience with their permission. I have had the gift of being named a released friend by my meeting. Is that a term folks are familiar with here? Is that something that has happened in meetings here in Minneapolis? Okay. Not yet. Wonderful. Not yet. So Putney Meeting is a small meeting. We think of ourselves as small. We're getting larger. But we're fairly young. We got together in the 60s. And early on in the life of the meeting, there was this burst of enthusiasm and energy. And at one time, we had three friends who had been released from ministry. And what that meant was that the meeting recognized that they were called to a particular ministry and that we accepted contributions on their behalf, tax-deductible contributions, and we helped people to be able to support them in ministry. And it was powerful work. We supported friends who were engaged in trauma healing, who were engaged in massage and other kinds of healing work, other kinds of activism for social justice. And then, as a meeting, we got a little lost. Things didn't go the way we had hoped. Can anyone resonate with that? As a meeting, we take on some work, we're really excited about it, and then it doesn't quite go the way we want. Things didn't go the way we want. People were hurt. There was confusion. Hopes were dashed, and we closed up. Another thing that had been happening in our meeting was that I know, like some friends here, we were led early on in the national debate in 1982 to minute our support for same-gender marriage and to take the marriage of a couple of two men under our care. And we went quiet for quite a while. We were burned. We were hurt. We closed off. Around the time that I came to the meeting, a number of other friends had felt led to move to the meeting. And there was a newness. There was a sense of opening. The meeting had been involved in a process of expanding and renovating our space. And that certainly was a part of our turning inward. But there was also this sense of, we've been burned. We really don't want to take more risks right now. And when I came into the meeting, I had been involved in travel in the ministry and in other work, particularly work related to building relationships with the people of Iraq. I was involved in a program that was providing humanitarian aid and advocacy on behalf of Iraqi refugees in the Middle East who had suffered because of the U.S.-led war and occupation. And some friends in the meeting were very supportive of that work, but there were others who said, don't even think about being a released friend of the meeting. We don't do that. We've tried that and it didn't work. We were still closed off. We still weren't ready. But we were together. We worshiped together. We were in relationship. We grew to know one another. And at some point in the process, other friends in the meeting began to say, you know, there is work that's happening. There's something that's going on that is the work of the meeting that we need to respond to. And friends began to take on that work and to consider it. And together, we engaged in a process of discernment, both about addressing and allowing the pain that we'd experienced to come out, but also allowing ourselves to feel the life and the hope and the possibility that was available to us. And it had almost nothing to do with me. It had a lot to do with the movement of the Spirit among us. It had a lot to do with who we were as a community. And we helped one another out of that place where we had been locked up, and we became more free. And step by step, a clearness committee became a support committee. And a support committee met with friends from another meeting who learned about oversight of ministry and how vital it is for a meeting not just to be supportive, but also to pull the chain back sometimes and to say, friend, you're running too fast. Or, you know, I think you stepped out of line there. We really need to spend more time praying with you and helping you understand how your ministry could be expressed more clearly. We learned about both of those things, and it was rough. But we did it in love, in relationship, because we were willing to be vulnerable and open with each other. We were willing to be in relationship. And now we have another committee for oversight of ministry. And at our last meeting of ministry and council, we heard suggestions of three more committees for oversight of ministry. We can't keep up, almost in some way, with the work and the life that's emerging in the meeting, because we have lost our fear that acknowledging some gifts will lead to others being diminished. We've lost our fear that if we make mistakes, we won't be able to recover together in love. We've opened to that possibility, the ministers of the Spirit, ministering to the Spirit that's in captivity and helping it to come more fully alive. And strangely enough, in a similar period of time, our meeting has come to a place where we were willing to engage as a body with our concerns over the Friends United meeting personnel policy and the concerns of some friends that that policy does not acknowledge the gifts of ministry given through all friends, that it might discriminate against some people, those who are in relationships where they're not married, or those who are same-gender couples. And our meeting, coming from that place of openness and abundance and love, has been led to a place that I really don't believe we could have been in had we not been sending more and more friends out to travel and learning more about the wider Quaker world. We've come to a place of saying, our meeting is clear on what 10 years of initial discernment and more have taught us about relationships of commitment and love. But we are also clear that only by staying in relationship as members of Friends United Meeting, as part of New England Yearly Meeting, who were founding members of Friends United Meeting, only by staying in relationship are we able to participate in love's transformation. Only by staying in relationship are we able to be channels of living water. Only by staying in relationship are we willing to challenge one another, hoping that we can be part of hearts changing and being open to the possibility that our hearts could change too. So we're preparing to participate in a program that Friends United Meeting is inviting friends all over the world to engage in called 40 Days of Prayer. We're praying with friends all over the world with the trust that we can all be changed, opening to that living water together. Who knows what'll happen? Change. Excuse me. Anybody else thirsty? Part of the thirst that I've seen in a lot of different places is this yearning for deeper corporate witness, this yearning for what we as friends together can do and say in a world plagued by so many challenges and so many problems. Our yearly meeting, following the inspiration of other friends, both monthly meetings and yearly meetings, and I think at least one monthly meeting here, if I remember correctly, or I think I heard tonight, we took a jubilee year where we followed the Old Testament practice of laying down our work and allowing ourselves to pray and to listen and to see what we were led to take up again, to have that Sabbath time, to have that resting time, to really be open in what we called meetings to hear God's call. So our yearly meeting, which, as friends may not know, is by some ways of counting, we're the oldest yearly meeting in the world. We were founded in 1661 and spent 100 years divided into two yearly meetings, reuniting in 1945. For our 350th anniversary sessions, we decided to take a jubilee year and to spend some time in prayer and in worship, asking how we might be led to witness, to grow in the world. And so we spent a year preparing for Jubilee, and then we spent a year in Jubilee, and then we spent a year recovering from Jubilee. I don't know if anybody's had this experience. We brought together about, I think it's something like 800 something Quakers, which is, you know, often we have at our yearly meeting sessions. We brought together these Quakers, and we had no program. And we sat in open worship. And things kind of went a little nuts, right? Because, you know, we had all these people there, and, you know, we had ways that we had done things for years, and we had laid that down, and we'd opened up that space. And when we did that, I don't know if friends would have an experience like this, but something that might have been a little predictable happened. Everybody who had a concern that they really wanted the whole yearly meeting to take up was led to speak about it. And so we had, you know, friend after friend after friend after friend waiting for the microphone to tell us what we really needed to do as a whole yearly meeting. You know, we had everything from we should all wear gray on Thursday and that would change everyone's minds, to deep and heartfelt, searching, appeals for us to recognize the pain and the brokenness in the world and to allow ourselves to be transformed. But it was so much that we couldn't cope with it. And it was really hard for the yearly meeting, and I think there was a lot of disappointment. There's a story about water from the Old Testament, from the time just after Abraham died. Folks are familiar with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, sort of these people who sort of are these characters that embody sort of the peoplehood, people who have a special relationship of knowing God and sharing what they know in the world as a blessing to everyone else. Early Friends identified a great deal with that story of people who have a particular spiritual understanding that they share as a blessing in the world. So after Abraham died, Isaac went around to a lot of places that Abraham had been, and he wanted to open up the wells that Abraham had dug. Maybe an image of opening up that spiritual depth, that spiritual life that earlier generations of friends have known. He wanted to go and rediscover that. And he went into the places where these wells had been, where God had told Abraham, there's living water there, dig, and it'll just come up from the ground. And in all of those places where he went, nobody believed there was water there. So he went to the first place, and he said, you know, we're going to dig for water. And people said, yeah, no way, that's ridiculous. This is a desert. This is not a place where there's going to be any water. And he said, well, I'll try anyway. And he dug, and the thing is that the well had been filled in with gravel and dirt and garbage. And he began excavating, and the water came out. And the first thing that happened was that everybody began fighting over the water. Because there was a little bit of water that was finally coming up. People were so thirsty for it, they began killing each other. And so he called that well Enmity. And he moved on. And he went to the next place where there was a well that he knew had been there, that there was living water there. But nobody believed that it was there, and so he dug and he opened the well, and the same thing happened. Everybody started fighting over it, and they said, why did you bring this living water? This is ridiculous. Everybody was fighting over it. And so we called that well contention. And finally, he went to the third well, and he opened it up, and there was enough water for everyone. People were familiar with what was happening. They recognized it, and there was peace. And he named that well Rehoboth, which means enough room. He had made enough room that people could receive the living water. In our yearly meeting, we knew that we were thirsty. We knew that we needed to open up that space. But when the water started coming, we didn't know what to do with it. And many of us got so disappointed and disillusioned that we thought that was a crazy idea. We shouldn't spend more time in open waiting worship listening for that. But some of those friends in our yearly meeting were faithful and carried that work forward. And the next year, there was healing. And the next year, there was clarity about some key points that we were called to do, that we had heard. And there were a lot of bumps in the road. There were a lot of words that were used that offended people. We had the characteristic struggles that we as friends have around language. But even that opened up the space for us to show our love in relationship. We had, in one of the minutes that came out of that Jubilee time when we were trying to capture the sense of what was going on, we had some explicitly Christian language that was not just explicitly Christian, but perhaps a little harsh to the ears of some people who had been injured by Christian language. And even that opened up an opportunity for dialogue. It opened up an opportunity for change and love and relationship for us to grow. And the next year, we had friends who had been in bitter opposition to one another standing on the floor of our yearly meeting sessions and saying, I thank God for all of the people who experience the divine, who experience the truth, the deepest truth, in ways that have nothing to do with the Bible. And we had other friends saying, I thank God as a non-theist friend for my brothers and sisters who are Christians. I acknowledge the depth of their faith, and I'm so grateful that we're part of the same yearly meeting. We were willing to wait, some of us, until there was enough water, until we could encounter that peace, and now we're beginning to see newness and life and openness. But if we had closed off as we were just opening up, we wouldn't have gotten there. So I guess I want to say that as a reminder, as an invitation, that if we begin to open to newness and change and living water, things could get pretty messy. And I think that's right. If you've got a dusty, dry piece of ground and you suddenly start pouring water on it, it's going to get muddy. The first thing that's going to happen, right? So my invitation for us is just to hold on. If we bring our thirst to one another, if we open ourselves to be vulnerable in relationship, things could get pretty messy. That's part of the journey and part of the process. Part of what emerged from us in that searching was the life and the energy we felt around creation care, around learning how we as a people could grow into a witness around eco-justice, around care for creation, and around helping to respond to some of the unprecedented challenges that are presented by catastrophic global climate change. And we did something that some of you may have experienced. It's a set of workshops that's called the Awakening the Dreamer Symposium, Awakening the Dreamer, Changing the Dream. It has almost nothing to do with Quakers. It's being organized by a group of people from different faiths, from different traditions, and none, who are drawing on wisdom that they have understood and encountered in South American indigenous culture. And they're inviting, it comes from an invitation that the story that I, as I heard it, was that indigenous people in South America invited people who were coming from the north to go home to their communities and change the sick dream of a world, of a society that we were living in. And so the invitation is that we're supposed to awaken from this dream where we control and abuse the resources of the earth and change the dream for the future we could live in. That isn't about catastrophe and death, essentially looking at catastrophic change in the world, but is about a new way of seeing how humanity could live in harmony with the natural world and with creation. So we went, as many of us in the yearly meeting, to a mid-year gathering last year. We went to this gathering, and we went through this symposium, and part of the symposium, would someone raise your hand if you've had anything to do with this or if you've been through that training? So a part of the training is this very structured experience where people are brought into a day or a weekend where they're given, through a series of video clips and a series of really well-practiced sections that are led by facilitators, into confronting the reality of global climate change, into waiting in the desperation and the brokenness, confronting how bad it really is, and then rising up from that place into a place of hope and energy and creativity and a future. And it was really transformative for a number of friends in our yearly meeting. And we heard comments from the floor of that gathering like, this is such a powerful experience. We need to bring this to every Quaker everywhere. And maybe that's true. Maybe that would be a wonderful thing. But one of the things that surprised me so much was that in that experience of opening our hearts to the pain and suffering of the world, of waiting down there in the brokenness, and of rising up to the hope and the love and the joy and the creativity on the other side, so many of us didn't recognize our own tradition. So many of us didn't recognize that this is, in some ways, at its essence, the message of early friends. In the writings of George Fox, and then I saw an ocean of darkness and death, and over it there flowed an infinite ocean of light and love. And in this I saw the infinite love of God, and I had great openings. Not running away from the ocean of darkness and death, acknowledging that it's there, allowing our hearts to be broken open by it, waiting in it together, but also waiting until we can feel that infinite ocean of light and love to arise. Margaret Fell, again and again and again in the first generation of friends, wrote to friends, encouraging each person, not just to be convinced of friends' message, but to encounter the brokenness in the world and in them, to wait in it, and to allow the community to help us to pass through that place into a place of deep joy, into a place of deep love and life. The journals of friends over and over and over again describe that experience of being sunk down into suffering and then coming through in the life and the joy and the hope on the other side. So why am I saying that? Because I really believe that the world needs our Quaker witness, that the world needs all of the ways that we individually and as friends organizations and as monthly meetings and as other groups are engaged in work and witness to help prevent the catastrophic effects of human-induced climate change, to help end the war in Afghanistan, to help address the legacy of U.S.-sponsored torture, for the work we do locally, in our communities. I know that the world needs that work, that vital, beautiful work that we are, so many of us, engaged in. But I also believe that in a world facing unprecedented challenges, it might be that one of the greatest gifts friends have to give is a real lived experience, an authentic lived experience of the love and the joy on the other side of despair. I know that that experience has been present for so many of us, and that in our worship, in our lives, in our families, we've dealt with suffering and we've brought it to our meetings and we have been healed and we have been held and we've come through on the other side. The world needs an authentic practice like that to be lived and shared. I believe there's something really beautiful about that. And in so many places, we are not teaching it and we're not sharing it. It's there, down at the roots, those deep roots that run down with the experiences of others that we might not have touched, but that so many others have. And I know it's in this room. And many of us are thirsty for what you have to share with one another. And friends all over the world are responding to both of those calls. When Emma Condori from Bolivia is sharing her struggles as a woman, coming to have her gifts fully recognized as a woman called to ministry in her yearly meeting, and also sharing the experiences of Bolivian holiness friends organizing for nonviolent direct action in the water wars when the corporations tried to seize the water supply of Bolivia. And friends were engaged in that work, helping to witness for another way in the midst of that. In the witness of Kenyan friends in the election violence that FCNL and others are offering so many opportunities for us to be engaged in. In the work of friends in Africa, in Burundi and Rwanda, working on trauma healing with healing and rebuilding our communities, learning from the lessons of the Alternatives to Violence program and other work, the African Great Lakes Initiative. When the Cuban friends are reaching out to people who are in prison, to people who are engaged in prostitution, in the growing challenges in their country. Friends all over the world are engaging in that witness, but they're also sustaining that witness to that authentic practice, that authentic lived experience. And I feel like it's a particular invitation for us as North American friends. What is that authentic experience that we can speak from? We can struggle to keep the waters from rising, but when the waters rise, how can we help one another? How can we help others to have that grounding, that resilience to be sustained? I think that's a rich gift from the first generations of friends, and it's one that calls to us. So what are you thirsty for? have you come more alive in relationship with others? What in your community, in your faith community, keeps the water from flowing? What practices, what obstacles, what barriers, what parts of the meeting or church that are not yet free? What in us might need to be changed for the living water to flow more freely? I want to invite friends into a brief time of worship, and then maybe we can have some conversation on whatever is rising for us.